Hello, everybody. Good evening. Welcome to the Evangelical Dark Web. Tonight, we are going to be discussing the Matt Walsh Am I Racist movie, specifically the ethical dilemma that's been raised by a lot of, I'm going to say, Anabaptist types, which we're going to watch the reaction to that, just kind of weigh in on it. Matt Walsh has weighed in on it as well. He's done a rebuttal. There's some articles out there that have been touching on it. And at best, a lot of them are cringe, or at worst, a lot of them are cringe. At best, a lot of them are bait. So I'm not sure which one's worse, but we're going to be diving into the whole ethical dilemma regarding the Ninth Commandment and whether Matt Walsh violated the Ninth Commandment in order to make the movie that he made. I see that we are live on YouTube and Twitter and Twitch, and I'm not seeing anything out of Rumble, whether we're live on Rumble yet. Let me just do a quick check. It says we're live on Rumble. Okay. So that's good news. So with that said, before I do let you know, I do want to let you know Winning Not Winsome is out. It's available on Amazon. It is also available Kindle, and there's no plans as of yet for audiobook. I was asked about that. The answer is not as of yet, because I assume I would have to record the audiobook, and I'm not eager to do that, to read 53,000 words or however many, whatever the actual word count is. I'm not eager to read that many words. So anyway, we're going to talk about Matt Walsh's Am I a Racist movie. I've not seen it. I have no intentions of seeing it because it's a Daily Wire movie. I'm just not interested. I'm not really interested in political movies, or, you know, I'm kind of interested in Christian movies. Not that this is a Christian movie, but only because of the stuff I do here am I interested in that. No intentions of feeding the Daily Wire machine in my case, but if it was available on a free streaming or on a streaming service I already have, I would watch it. So that's my position on that. Your thoughts, Anthony? I don't know if you've seen it. Any intentions?
That's the same. I mean, I didn't really care much for the whole "what is a woman" overreaction, where a lot of people on our side were praising the movie and kind of like, I guess, heaping a lot of praise on the movie that was really undeserved. I mean, obviously this is mocking the left, which unfortunately is the most that conservatives can do in terms of art, is just smug mockery. And I don't think that's a good tactic long term for creating art and in creating competing institutions. I mean, I'll give Daily Wire some credit for actually launching this thing into theaters.
Yes.
And using their apparatus to make money in the marketplace rather than putting it behind a paywall. So I'll give them credit for actually making the movie available for the public, but I'm just not a customer for the movie.
Yeah, it's not really for me, but I will give Matt Walsh some credit, because I do agree. Him putting in theaters is going to make it far more impactful than whatever What is a Woman, because that was just a streaming movie on Daily Wire Plus. As I recall, I don't believe they sent that to theaters, which was a stupid decision. But, and that's why the film didn't have a real impact. And yes, Conservative Inc. has grossly exaggerated the impact of What is a Woman, but I think this film could have an impact because they paid to have an impact. You know, Robin DiAngelo is a chief grifter, and they paid her to humiliate her. So I do think that is
hilarious.
Yes, that is honestly hilarious. And I think that's a real impact, is the fact that they've brought these people out. They've actually paid them to be in the movie. So I guess they're cast members. I hope the movie bills them as a cast member, but, you know, starring Matt Walsh, Robin DiAngelo, and just bills them by, the order of payment. Like, I assume Matt Walsh is making the most money from this project, but, you know, as far as the people in the movie, you know, Robin DiAngelo and the other, so on and so forth, would be listed in the credits.
Well, I don't know
in that order.
I don't know if Walsh actually makes money on his movies, unless it's one of those, if he makes it off the gross. Daily Wire's contract, the way they structured that Crowder contract, was they demanded that he make a certain amount of content. And they included something like a long form video.
My guess is that this movie is an LLC of its own.
Yeah, it would have to be. That's who Robin DiAngelo would have signed the contract with. So I know, like, I think David Morrell on Protestia might have said she knew she was being paid by the Daily Wire, which I don't think is true, because it was probably Am I Racist LLC or whatever.
Yeah, my assumption, because that's how most movies operate, is they create their own company, basically their own shell company, for the studios and the producers and all the people involved. They create a new company for the movie that is the movie. So, yeah, I didn't know that David Morrell of Protestia said that. I feel like he should know.
The whole debate is over whether Matt Walsh lied to Moon Payne,
and then whether that's justified or not.
But again, I would reject the premise that Matt Walsh was the one that handed a contract to her. And odds are the contracts were probably sent electronically, so that when, by the time Robin DiAngelo's on set, the contract would have already been signed.
And yeah, that makes sense.
So they're not signing having that conversation preemptively. If anything, it's just, oh, we're retaining you for a documentary. It's everything would have been up front. So I don't think there was actually any deception in luring her in. They hired her to be in a documentary. Of course, she didn't know that it was a mockumentary.
Yeah, because, and I believe the story is that Matt Walsh paid to get credentials, DEI credentials, and then used them. So that is, it's not like he was really lying in that respect, because he did pay to become an expert, to get certified as an expert, and that's what he does in the movie. So I first wanted to talk about the reaction to it from a lot of the YouTubers that operate in like the right wing space. Nerdrotic is very famous and prominent among our, a lot of people on the right like Nerdrotic. I'm subscribed to Nerdrotic. So that being said, he gave this movie a glowing review, although he began it by stating that Blazing Saddles was the greatest comedy of all time, which is just an asinine statement. I don't think Blazing Saddles is that good. It's overrated. Very overrated. Yes, this is a movie that could be made nowadays, if not for the low production value of Blazing Saddles, which was intentionally low. But that's the only reason that film couldn't be made. There's no real edgy joke in that movie that couldn't be made. I'm just going to be real. Out of all the movies from 1973, Deliverance is the movie that could not be made today. Not Blazing Saddles.
Yeah, Squeal Like a Pig.
Squeal Like a Pig. They're not making that. So anyway, he said he gave that thing a glowing review. Said it was a great best comedy of all year. I have a hard time believing that, because I do feel like Netflix has put out some good movies this year, and Amazon as well. Like, give me some John Cena. But Matt Walsh is very good at deadpan comedy. So yeah, I believe that there's going to be a lot of humor in this movie that lands. So Nerdrotic gave it a glowing review. Critical Drinker, his review kind of sucked. And I actually kind of wanted to play it, because he spends so much time virtue signaling in his review.
Yeah, it's kind of the problem with British people, is that they don't realize that they're a lot more liberal than the average American. And it shows up every single time they talk about politics. Either that, or they're far more secular in their mindset, so they don't understand the need for religiosity in a functioning society.
So here we go. This is the review from Critical Drinker. It's on his side channel, After Hours.
If you've ever disagreed with anyone on social media in the last 10 years, there's a pretty good chance you'll have been called racist. Well, are you? What does it even mean to call someone racist in 2024? Is modern society really a big old bubbling cauldron of hatred and bigotry? Or is it all just a bit of a sham perpetuated by ideologues, useful idiots, and grifters who've constructed an entire industry that profits from the very problem that it claims to be trying to solve? This is the subject of Matt Walsh's latest mockumentary, Am I Racist? A kind of satirical look at the modern obsession with race, the self-appointed experts who make a living out of talking about it, and the average people on the street who seem kind of perplexed by the whole thing. And before anyone gets their panties in a bunch here, this isn't an endorsement of Matt Walsh, The Daily Wire, or any of that stuff. It's a movie review, plain and simple, so put the pitchforks down. For now. Anyway.
So I wanted to pause right there because there's virtue signal number one. And the dude's reviewing Am I a Racist? Like he's redeemed Zoomer, or not redeemed Zoomer, like he's Zoomer historian doing a Hitler biography. And he has to provide that disclaimer. This is not an endorsement. You know, use common sense and stuff like that. It's like, is that really necessary?
I mean, the problem is he absolutely shilled for Lady Ballers, and that was also this
no,
year.
I didn't think he really shilled for Lady Ballers.
I thought he did. I'm like, if you said that movie was good when it probably wasn't, and it was pushing 2 hours, and let's be honest, it probably ran through its jokes and like
no, because he said that the movie Lady Ballers wasn't balanced enough. I'm like, you can't be balanced in comedy that makes fun of transgenderism. You can't be balanced and funny. You can actually do that with abortion, but you're just pointing out how cruel it is with abortion. So that's my thought on that. But anyway, that's virtue signal number one.
With that out of the way, let's move forward into a brighter future together, shall we? The basic premise of the movie is that Walsh, bombarded with constant media propaganda about racism in America, decides to go on a little journey of discovery and find out if he, and by extension all of modern society, is really as racist as we're led to believe. This leads him to interviewing everyone from leading figures and academics, all of whom charge very generous fees to sit down and talk with him, all the way down to average people on the street. Being a pretty infamous figure in these circles, he soon discovers that people recognize him pretty quickly, and so he dons the world's least convincing disguise, posing as an anti-racism documentarian in order to get access to people who would never normally engage with him.
So I wanted to pause right there, because Matt Walsh explains that there is an instance where he does lie, but it's a completely joking instance where he's clearly pretending that his name is Steven, but he's stuttering and doing it like he's intentionally making it not believable when he tries to pretend to have a different name. And he says that was part of the joke. And Matt Walsh did his video responding to the controversy that's brought on by people like Neil Shenvey, Andrew Walker, and Danny Burke, just to name drop some of the people that we're going to talk about. And there we go.
Other reviewers have described this movie as a kind of conservative version of Borat, and I think that's a pretty accurate description. Most of the interviews and Vox Pop segments are real conversations with real people, but there's a kind of loose scripted narrative tying it all together, with a couple of comedy skits moving Walsh's character arc forward and poking fun at some high-profile celebrity fuck-ups. And I guess what surprised me about this movie is how much of its comedy actually lands. Lady Ballers was proof that The Daily Wire and humor don't always mesh together very well, but Am I Racist is actually much more effective because it plays up to Walsh's deadpan sense of humor. And credit to the guy, he's able to stay in character even in the most absurd situations, clearly having to improvise and think on his feet at times. Instead of being a flamboyant personality like Sacha Baron Cohen, he's able to come across as more of a blank slate, asking what seem like innocent questions and allowing his interviewees to tie themselves in logical knots. It's a perfect example of giving your opponent just enough rope to hang themselves with, and he does it so easily that it kind of makes you wonder how much thought these people have actually applied to themselves. Like,
so, that's pretty much the premise of the movie, basically, that he's able to just deadpan comedy his way through these situations, and because he's, such a blank slate, I guess, like you said, he does a good job of explaining that. And now I've actually never seen Borat. I don't know if you've seen Borat, but so I'm not overly familiar with that. The mockumentary has been around for a while.
I mean, I've seen some of the the Jackass stunts, and again, that's more in-house prank
yeah
style stuff, so I have seen that, but that's in-house for the most part. That's just a bunch of dudes doing a bunch of stunts in like a confined area.
So just to confirm, cool. He was not overly glowing for Lady Ballers, which I thought the premise was good, but the execution was terrible because they didn't hire quality actors, and that's a type of movie that needed quality actors in order for it to succeed as a premise. You need people that know how to improvise lines, and Matt Walsh seemingly was one of the only people in that cast, but he was also a minor character in that movie. So it seemed like one of those, we're just trying to get a bunch of conservatives in the movie to sell the movie. And you know what that is reminiscent of? God's Not Dead. Let's get
Willie. I was going to say Nefarious, but you know.
Well, it didn't sell. But Willie Robertson, Corey Robertson, his wife, they were both in the movie. Franklin Graham gets a reference in the movie. So because obviously so many people listen to Franklin Graham sermons. I didn't even know he was famous for preaching, but anyway, it hurts because it's true kind of speaks at a good, and this is where we're going to transition, is we're going to start talking about this issue about bearing false witness. What does that mean? Not all lies are bearing false witness against someone. That's definitely where the conversation's going to go, but I do want to have an overview of what the movie is and what the movie's about. For the understanding of the audience.
Like the academic who suggests that Walsh's daughter would be racist for not preferring diverse Disney princesses like Moana, but also racist if she were to dress as that same character for Halloween. Or the rich white women paying tens of thousands of dollars to attend a luxury dinner so that they can complain about how unfair and horrible modern America is. Or the anti-racism author reluctantly guilted into paying $30 in reparations to one of Walsh's black production assistants. And I guess that's the real heart of what this movie is driving at, taking a very unflattering look at people who make a living claiming to provide solutions to problems that are largely manufactured by them, and the reluctance of so many people to question what they say. Like at one point when Walsh starts a petition to repaint the Washington Monument black, and nearly everyone he meets on the street happily signs it, even when you can tell that they don't really agree with it. It's interesting stuff that makes you laugh at the absurdity of it all, but also raises some pretty uncomfortable questions about human behavior, our vulnerability to peer pressure and mob mentality. Is it a flawless piece of filmmaking? Absolutely not. Some of the interviews drag on longer than they need to, not all of the scripted segments land as well as they could have, and I think it might have been worth acknowledging that despite all the silliness and hypocrisy exposed by this film, actual racism is still very much a thing and should.
Okay, Virtue Signal 2?
Shouldn't be downplayed or mocked for the sake of political point scoring.
Actually, yeah, again, I kind of disagree with that. My wife was listening to this while I was listening to this, and she's like, what? Why does he feel the need to say that?
I mean, Drinker lives in Scotland. That's literally where they're trying to replace their own population with Arabs and Middle East, Northern Africans.
Mina. Now, is he a Highlander or a Lowlander?
I don't think he's a Glasgowlander. And Glasgow is where all of those people live, or not all those people, but the liberals live. And they control Scotland. So yeah, go to London. Yeah, that'll probably give you some animus towards other groups of people. Live in South Florida, where 300,000 Haitians live.
Given the subject matter and the people who made it, this movie was always going to be divisive, and the unfortunate reality is that a huge chunk of the potential audience will just point blank refuse to see it. And that's a real shame, because the whole point of art, and especially documentaries like this, is that they're supposed to be provocative and uncomfortable. They're supposed to make people question their assumptions, challenge the narrative, and encourage them to think more critically about how they see the world. And in that respect, I think this movie actually does a pretty good job. No matter what side of the political divide you come from, no matter your opinions on the artist, I think you'll still be able to take something pretty interesting from this movie. And at the end of the day, isn't that the whole point of making it? Anyway.
So, that's a nice overview of the movie. I that should have been not a woke critique. You shouldn't have to virtue signal when you're reviewing a movie like that. It's just kind of lame.
I mean, so, the genre in general is going to make it a very limited appeal anyway.
So let me get into what the most controversial aspect in my mind of the making of this film was, and that's paying these people. That to me is actually the biggest ethical dilemma in the making of Am I a Racist? That's the biggest ethical dilemma. Do we pay people, pay evil people in order to do this? You know, giving, is it a sin to give Robin DiAngelo $30,000 or $50,000 or however much he commanded? It was, you know, $30,000, my low estimate. I don't know what the actual number was, but they paid her for that interview. Is that a sin to have done it? That's the biggest ethical dilemma, I think, in the entire production of this film. Not whether, you know, they pretended to be someone else, whether they actually advanced evil by paying someone who's evil. That's the biggest ethical dilemma.
I mean,
and it's not one that I'm wholly unfamiliar with, because even at a low level, hey, do I pay for this webinar so I can record it and leak it? Do I pay for access to Revoice conference so I can leak it? And ultimately, I haven't done that, but these are things that I've done. Now, less of an ethical dilemma is, do I, and this is something I have done, I sign up for these free webinars for content that I might eventually use, like the Evangelicals for Harris, and I use a fake name for that. That's much more similar to what Matt Walsh is doing in most of this.
Yeah, got to make it a funny name, got to have some fun with it. I mean, the way I look at the name is I think most people in contemporary spheres do have the wrong interpretation of the ninth commandment. What is a sin? But I don't necessarily think that it follows that Matt Walsh in making the documentary violates the ninth commandment, because then you're saying any form of undercover work is inherently sinful.
Which is a point that Matt Walsh makes.
Again, the only distinction I could even find that could possibly stem from scripture or and even historical interpretation is stratagem in war. But all other examples of bearing falsehood are condemned by historical Christian thought leaders.
So I do want to touch up on that. So I know you've done some research. I actually started reading the Ten Commandments today because it was on my read through of scripture, and I made it to Exodus 20 today. So yay. Very fitting. So there is bearing false witness, which is different from lying. And then we do have clear instances of scripture where lying is not necessarily considered a sin.
Well,
Rahab is the most famous example.
But I would disagree with that. And majority of Christian thought would disagree with that.
Okay.
I've looked up a bunch of commentaries.
Okay, so break that down. On Rahab or...
Yeah, so I looked up a bunch of commentaries. So let me just start with Calvin's Institutes. And what he asserts the ninth commandment actually means. And this is Institutes 2.8.2.
Your mic is cutting in and out. So let me just say there's a few instances in scripture where this happens. First is Rahab. That's probably the most commonly cited. And a lot of people use that for, like, you know, the Nazi analogies, Corey Tenboom or whatever.
But that is the modern interpretation.
Okay. Your mic's cutting in and out. So another example is actually also in Exodus. So before the Ten Commandments are actually given, they tell Pharaoh that we're just going out into the wilderness for 3 days to make sacrifices and then we'll be back. What does the Pharaoh say? Oh, these people are lazy. Let's give them more work. We should not even be giving them straw to make bricks from. So they are told to tell Pharaoh, we're going out into the wilderness for 3 days to make sacrifices, even though there is no real intention from that to actually return. So is that actually a lie, or is that just you're establishing pretext because you already know that Pharaoh is going to say no, so that more judgment, more plagues can come upon Egypt, and eventually you can go on your own volition, at least until Pharaoh reneges on his promise yet again, and then gets destroyed at the Red Sea. So is your mic working?
How am I sounding now?
There's a bit of a delay, but...
Okay.
But your audio is fine.
Okay, so the way Calvin interprets the ninth commandment is he kind of imputes that there's a positive aspect to the law, that you have a duty to uphold the you have a duty to assert truth for the maintenance and good name of your neighbor and his estate. So you have basically an obligation to uphold your neighbor's reputation. So he does assert like a positive law aspect to the law. So it does go beyond a basic semblance of perjury. But if you look at his commentary on Joshua 2, let me just read it real quick. Now, the questions which arise here are, first, was treachery to her country excusable? Secondly, could her lie be free from fault? We know that one's love for our country, which is, as it were, a common mother, has been implanted to us by nature. Now, again, James White.
Hold on. Nationalism.
James White would say that this is not a biblical anthropology, which, you know, because that's what Calvin's asserting, is that ordo amoris means you should have love for your country over the foreigner, and that Rahab's actions are inherently treacherous to her people. So that's the first dilemma he identifies in the text. So when therefore Rahab knew that the object was intended to overthrow the city in which she had been born and brought up, it seemed a detestable act of inhumanity to give her aid and counsel to the spies. And it goes on, and then it says, it was therefore only knowledgeful, or only the knowledge communicated to her mind by God, which exempted her from fault as having been set free from the common rule. Her faith is commended by the two apostles, who at the same time declare, and this is Hebrews 11:31 and James 2:25, that the service which she rendered to the spies was acceptable to God. But so that's her betraying her people as an act of faith.
And
her believing that the Lord had given the land to the Israelites.
Yeah, so, and she establishes that pretty early in the story, basically, that she, you know, everyone has dread, and I know where your God is more powerful. So she has faith. And that's her response from fear, actually, because everyone's already afraid, but she responds to that with faith. So it's interesting that, you know, that was more of a classical. Do you have any other?
This is on the falsehood part on Calvin.
Okay.
So as to the falsehood, we must admit that though it was done for a good purpose, it was not free from fault. For those who hold what is called a dutiful lie to be altogether excusable do not sufficiently consider how precious truth is in the sight of God. Therefore, although our purpose be to assist our brethren, to consult for their safety and relieve them, it never can be lawful to lie, because that cannot be right, which is contrary to the God or to the nature of God. And God is truth. And still, the act of Rahab is not devoid of the praise of virtue, although it was not spotlessly pure, for it often happens that while the saints study to hold the right path, they deviate into circuitous courses.
So I guess a dumb way of putting that is that because humans are fallen, even the way we do good deeds is also fallen.
Yes. Now keep in mind, I looked at other commentaries, on this passage. So I looked at a Lutheran commentary from like the 17th or maybe 18th century. And it basically asserts the same thing regarding Joshua 2. This would be the, I guess, Kiel and DeLeach Old Testament commentary. There is Hugo Grotius, who's a Dutch reformer, who actually did support the idea of the salutary lie. There's Matthew Henry, who more or less agrees with Calvin. And from him, I actually get some more commentary on Saul, because a lot of people want to bring up whether Saul was right in pretending to be insane. So he actually says that this is imperfect. And again, David, if you look at 1 Samuel 21, he does sin multiple times regarding lying to the priest about his intentions, and that priest dies. So David's lie caused that priest to die at the hands of Saul, because he did not properly warn him.
Another thing to keep in mind is that, because the Bible is like a lot of ancient literature, and in that treachery is highly condemned in in a lot of ancient literature. You know, the Trojan horse is not exactly viewed with honor. When Levi and Simon, or is it Simeon, when they, you know, get the Canaanites to, you know, circumcise themselves after they rape Dinah, they go in and kill them. That's viewed as treachery, and, you know, so that's viewed as a sinful act. And ultimately, in the blessings, or more like curses, that Jacob gives them, he brings that back up. So
and then when you look at David pretending to be insane, again, this is, a lot of people might regard David as being, you know, excusable in his actions, but it's really not. It's not necessarily, you know, a time of high trust in God, even though it's out of these incidents that David would pen a couple of the Psalms, particularly Psalm 55 and Psalm 34 come out of this time in his life. But basically, if he goes to King, I guess, Achish, who would have actually treated him favorably on the surface, but in pretending to be dumb and insane, he actually defames his own reputation and does not express trust in the Lord that the Lord will deliver him.
So.
But Matthew Henry actually does have a line that says, yet it may in some degree be excused, for it was not a downright lie, and it was like a stratagem in war by which he imposed upon his enemies for the preservation of his own life. So in that, you could argue that there is some excuse, but that would essentially be for an act of war.
Okay, so obviously that, and how much can an act of war be extrapolated? Because we got some people, I'm going to pull up Neil Shenvey, because Neil Shenvey is the big brains. He's the controlled opposition of Big Eva. And he said, you know, if deception is morally permissible in order to defeat the left, why not voter fraud? And again, I know someone posed a question, is like, would the founding fathers have committed voter fraud, you know, to save the revolution or something like that? And it's like, and most people said no. I'm like, I'm not overly convinced. I think they might have because of prudence.
Here's my response.
I'm not going to advocate for voter fraud.
I know,
because I don't think it would make a difference, because we have the Electoral College. So I don't see the strategic value in committing voter fraud in a red state to combat voter fraud in a blue state. Like that doesn't even make sense.
Well, I know Crypto's posted a good response to this, but I mean, my response is, can the Republicans actually try buying elections first before we even get to the idea
can of we like, outspend just
shoving
Democrats?
A bunch of fake ballots into the mailbox? Can we actually outspend them on these election races instead of like wasting $100 million on like a failed DeSantis campaign or whatever Pompeo, Mike Pence, and all these other losers spent on their campaigns? That money could have won Alex Laxalt his Senate seat in 2022. So yeah, you're losing real races because tens of millions of dollars is being wasted on failed presidential runs that would have won Senate seats.
Neil Shenvey is arguing that he does not believe that deception is morally permissible in order to defeat the left, which, again, that's someone who's not going to make it because he doesn't understand the ramifications of the zero-sum game that is politics in the modern age. So I do want to catch up because I saw some good comments about the paying for service. Andrew Duggan says it's not lawful to it's not a sin to pay evil people for an interview. It is lawful. Justify the claim, Cyrus the Elder says, that it's sinful to pay someone to do a service. And first of all, I do see situations where that could be sinful. Like, let me buy a subscription to OnlyFans for some ethot so I can give them the gospel. Like, come on, man. You're not really doing that. So I'm going to say,
yeah, let me go.
That
down
would be a situation.
Let me go down to the
let me rent
club.
A prostitute in
go
order
to the strip club with some dollar bills.
Hand out gospel tracks.
Make it rain. No. Make it rain. No, okay. Gospel tracks and dollar bills.
But so that would definitely be a situation which it would be sinful to hire someone to do a service. But in this case, this is an ethical dilemma that I've wrestled with, and I've never really had a conclusion on either side of whether it's sinful. But to me, it's a much larger issue than whether Matt Walsh comically disguising himself is a lie or not.
Well, there is the Judge Ehud, I think, and Judges 2 or 3, maybe it's Judges 1, but he's one of the, like, I won't say minor judges because he probably has a very brief thing, but he goes and kills the fat king that the sword gets stuck into his flabs. So,
right, because he doesn't tell them that he's left-handed, so he does commit some sort of, you know,
deception.
Trickery.
Now, again, deception. Did he actually have a gift in which he gave to the king? Probably. There probably was an actual tribute that was presented to the king, and then obviously he gives him the extra gift into the stomach.
The gift that keeps on giving because he couldn't get his sword back. So that's Neil Shenvey, and Neil Shenvey is very much controlled opposition, and, you know, he goes to J.D. Greer's church, so obviously he's pretty woke himself, but he is paraded around, and this is something that I've been talking with people about, like, who's paying Neil Shenvey to be who he is, because he's kind of like a stay-at-home dad, in a way. I think he's a stay-at-home dad otherwise. But he's promoted and he's brought into a bunch of organizations to be their consultant on a lot of these issues. He's basically the Robin DiAngelo of, you know, anti-wokeness, so to speak, in a lot of Big Eva, which is just absurd because he's not actually opposed to wokeness. And, he, you know, the fact is that a lot of woke people are paying him to do it. Like,
I mean, again,
I forget what the recent example was, but it involved Ligon Duncan and someone else. It's like Ligon Duncan's extremely woke.
Well, and keep in mind, the problem with Shenvey's analysis is, let's say the Democrats are shoving fraudulent ballots into the ballot box every single election. They keep winning. So would it then be unlawful or immoral for the Republicans to do the same in order to even have a level competition? I would say it's not. But at the same time, I would also say you can overthrow your government because you have the right of revolution, that they're, you know, rigging elections, and that delegitimizes the government. So,
right. And that's just, you know, hypothetically, you know, because you got channels like What If Altus who suggests that we're going to have a revolution as a result of the 2024 election because both parties haven't conceded losing an election in the last 8 years. But moving on from the election question, I do want to bring up Matt Walsh's video, which is right here. And Dusty Devers, credit to him for clipping the exact part that I wanted. So credit to Dusty Devers. Here we go. Matt Walsh, 2 minutes of him.
But I can't help but note a certain strain of Christianity, one that does not seem to be confined to any particular branch or denomination, that is always standing by, ready to nitpick and find a reason to be spiritually troubled by any Christian who leaves the realm of theory and argument and discussion and actually tries to go out and do something. So say what you want about me and our movies. I know I'm not everybody's cup of tea. I know the movies are not. But we are trying to actually fight this culture war. That's what inspired me to get into filmmaking to begin with. It's a creative outlet that I find truly fulfilling in a way that nothing in my professional life ever has been. But it's also a way to change the culture, actively change it.
So Matt Walsh says that, you know, it's not a specific denomination. And I will say it is a specific line of thinking, and it's Anabaptist.
Well, yes and no. But
have you seen anyone that's not an Anabaptist really object on the deception grounds?
Yes and no. The problem is you got a lot of people that are applying historic thought in Christianity. Again, we can talk Calvin, Matthew Henry. I went with the Lutherans. I even checked the Catholic commentary, which called Rahab's sin venial sin. So it did not say it was mortal sin, but it did say it was venial sin. So, I mean, it's if you apply historic Christian thought, the idea of Rahab and defending the spies is sin, according to historic thought in Christianity. And so too would be lying to the Nazis about the Jews underneath your floorboards or whatever. That would be sin, because if Rahab's incident is sinful, so too is that. But too many people are, they got
more Hitler, so actually
they got Hitler brain. So they are starting with their application and then trying to form a theology to justify their application.
So rather than just say we can't do good deeds without sinning, you have to conjure a way that something isn't a sin, is what you're saying.
I'm saying that's why modern thought. Because again, if you look at John MacArthur, a modern theologian, his commentary on Judges Joshua 2 is the exact same as Calvin's. It's the exact same as Matthew Henry. I even saw a Methodist commentary that said no. And again, on Calvin with the midwives, I mean, there is debate over whether they were Hebrew midwives or not, but if they were,
there are the midwives to the Hebrews.
Well, I mean, like King James says Hebrew midwives. But like Calvin asserts that they were Hebrew midwives and says that they did sin because they did not in testifying to the Pharaoh assert piety as their reason. So that they did present a falsehood, and that falsehood was sinful.
And who gave that commentary?
That would be Calvin's.
Okay. So because they didn't more honestly say, but I'm not even sure if that's necessarily correct, because we should not be asserting our own, or we shouldn't be trying to lunge into martyrdom.
Well, I mean, you're already forced to testify to the king. So similar to what Paul was forced to do before Felix and obviously eventually in Rome. So you're forced to give a testimony to your actions. Therefore they should have testify to the fear of God, not to the quickness of the Hebrew birthing process. Now, other scholars do say that it was they were Egyptian midwives.
That was kind of because they make a comparison to Egyptian women in their reasoning.
Yes.
They're not like Egyptian women. They poop out them babies way quicker.
So again,
before we even get there.
Whether it's a falsehood or not probably depends on your interpretation of whether those are Hebrew or Egyptian midwives.
Okay. So here, continuing on with Matt Walsh.
Change it by creating it. I'm tired of talking about it all the time. Criticizing has its place and its use, I suppose. I do it all the time, but I want to do more than that. I mean, it sounds quite cliche to say that I want to make a difference. So sorry for the cliche, but yeah, I want to make a difference, an actual difference. And there is no way to do that without opening yourself to criticism from your own side. And if I've learned anything these past few years, it's that. Anyone on our side who tries to do anything aside from just talking about this stuff, it will get picked apart by their own side. And I know that the justification is always that, well, hey, iron sharpens iron, and we're just trying to make you better. Like, okay, but fine. But it doesn't seem like that always. It actually seems sometimes that there are people on our side who they just really don't want you to do anything. Like, all they want to do is just talk constantly. Talk and give my opinion, and here's this, and analyze and criticize. They just don't, they take exception when anyone tries to like stand up and say, okay, here's, I want to do something different here. I'm going to try to go out and do something. But I can't.
So that's Matt Walsh, and I thought that clip was a banger. Good job on Matt Walsh there. Because he's absolutely right. There are a large class of people that just want to make money doing podcasts and stuff, and I hardly make any money on Evangelical Dark Web, because I don't have the a church subsidizing me. which a lot of these people do, or, you know, seminary or stuff like that. So a lot of these people are already subsidized in some way, shape, or form. Or maybe they have foreign money. A lot of Christian media is very much sold out to foreign interest groups, particularly ones that wear hats that are tiny. So with that said, a lot of people aren't interested in actually being an activist. I've always respected Matt Walsh because of that. Like, I don't agree with him on everything, obviously, but he's someone who operates in this faith, in this space, not faith, with good faith. He's someone that actually means it. He's not actually a grifter like a lot of other people at the Daily Wire are. I also like Megan Basham over the Daily Wire, who did make a difference with her book, Shepherds for Sale. And again, that book got a lot of criticism for ethical concerns. Like, why didn't you reach out to these people for comment before publishing the book and stuff like that? And I don't see that as a necessity. And, you know, anytime an article says, this person didn't reply for comment, like, you sent that email at 11 o'clock at night and published at 6 o'clock in the morning. You know, you just sent that as a saving face to add some word count. And of course, you'll update it if they reply, but you have no care whether they reply in time or not. You're publishing it anyway because you have a deadline. So Moses was an activist. That is true. That is true. Especially before the Hebrews hated him because he saved one of them from being, you know. But here's the thing about Moses. He was treacherous about it. Moses did not kill the Egyptian in broad daylight while the Egyptian was striking a Hebrew. He waited. He caught the guy alone and then concealed the body afterwards. That's the biggest thing about Moses. And that's why they didn't view him with honor, because he acted with treachery. So. Zeb Boykin, what's going on? So I don't know if you have any thoughts on Moses on this one.
No, unfortunately, I didn't dive deep in the commentaries on Moses' actions.
I find the Exodus story pretty fascinating because they do tell Pharaoh, let us go out into the wilderness, a 3 days journey to make sacrifices.
Well, a similar example would be Samuel saying that he's going to do the sacrifice, but God gives him the heifer to do the sacrifice. So he can say he was telling the truth, even though he was withholding information. Withholding information is not necessarily presenting any falsehood.
Yeah, it's not a false witness to omit information or, you know, not volunteer everything.
But I mean, the problem is I saw a lot of people, and again, this is both sides were ridiculous. One, you had the people that were against Matt Walsh probably making a category error, because again, if you assert that this is a stratagem in war, then the deception can be lawful under the ninth commandment, because it's a wartime activity. So deception is inherent in the act of war. And that would make it closer to Ehud, the judge, you know, stabbing a dude with a sword.
Hold on. Since Joshua is a pretty relevant text here, during the taking of Ai, is it pronounced Ai? But either way, Joshua 8, right? They perform a textbook feigned retreat in that text. It is, I don't know if that's the first ever documented instance of a feigned retreat or not, but that is a feigned retreat. So they deceived the villagers on the battlefield by pretending to retreat, and then they ambushed the city from behind. They had people hiding that ambushed the city. Deception in warfare, and it's right in Joshua after the story of Rahab. So there's not even a biblical dilemma as far as deception and warfare goes with the use of feigned retreat in scripture.
Again, all the examples I point to, again, Ehud would be one where it's using deception to gain access to the enemy and then slaughtering him. I mean, there are the others with like the guy that got a spike drilled through his head. I didn't check what the commentary said about that and whether that would be considered dishonorable to betray hospitality. But as far as individual actors go, I don't necessarily think, to protect the innocent, you are entitled to violate the ninth commandment. And even again, when David's trying to protect himself in the hands of the Philistines, it is condemned, at least in commentary. And it does backfire on him as he's essentially driven away from the Philistines shortly after that. And a Philistine, I guess, magistrate who would have seen him favorably, or likely seen him favorably.
So now this is definitely an interesting conclusion that we're reaching that I'm not sure that most people have reached. It's basically the idea that we can't do good imperfectly.
Well, I guess the flip side is that you had a lot of people that were, I guess Josh Dawes would be the one that was making a lot of ridiculous examples.
And he's been pretty good. He's a pretty good guy though.
Yeah, but I do think he was taking it to the extreme where it's just like, if the cops are right behind the school teacher or whatever saying, will you trans your child? Do you lie or do you tell the truth? Which again, I don't necessarily believe in using hyperbole to prove our points.
So there was an instance, I forget what state it was. I think it was like Ohio, where these kids got their child taken away from them because they told the school exactly why they were pulling their child out. They got the CPS called on them and they lost their child because they were not prudent in why they were taking their kid out of public school. So they failed as parents because they wanted to make a massive show about something when it would have just been good to quietly withdraw your kid from public school.
Exactly. And so if you're in that kind of situation where it's like the child in the public school, less information is best information. You could even just say, I'm in the process of scheduling an appointment with the doctor right now. And that way you can actually say, because, asserting that you're in the process is the first step of the process.
I mean, there's so many kids being transgendered these days. The doctors are just backed up.
Right. So you can actually just say, I'm in the process of researching doctors. You can even just say that.
And then get out of the state.
But again, if you're a parent in that situation where your child is, questioning that sort of stuff, you've already failed. So let's, start with the first step being introspection that you did fail somewhere along the road and overseeing your duty as a parent. But yes, less information is best. It's like talking to the cops. Anything you say can and will be used against you.
And I do not advocate talking to the police at all. Because at the end of the day, they're agents of the state. And honestly,
And I think another example was whether it's a...
Hopefully you don't need them.
It's okay to lie to your spouse about a surprise party. And it's like, it was 75-25 yes. Like, so there's some major problems with Ninth Commandment discipleship in the church if people actually think that's acceptable for a surprise party.
Well, because again, your point is you're doing good, but imperfectly, but you would, I don't want to say you're trivializing it. You're calling it sin, but trivializing it. Is that a fair critique of what you're doing? Or
well, I'm just saying like that's the most trivial example of the harmless, you're trying to do good, but again, we're not talking about a diversion. I think it actually is you make a false statement in order to prepare a surprise party. It was a weird poll that he put out, which is why it's just like, why are we
going down this road?
And the second of all is why did majority of people say yes? Now it goes back to the Santa Claus thing. Another example.
Now the Santa Claus thing. Yeah. I do think
is a clear violation of the Ninth Commandment.
And here's the thing. I feel like our generation is going to kill the Santa Claus vibes because the boomers were very big into that. They passed it down to the millennials, but I don't think it's going to get passed down from millennials to alphas is what they call my children's generation.
I don't know.
I don't even know, but maybe I don't want to call them betas. So I do think that that brings up an ethical dilemma. And, you know, my wife and I have talked about that. So we're not really on team Santa Claus. We're not like wholly anti Santa Claus as a Christmas character, but it's not something that we tell our kids is real. And, you know, is something that you can depend on, you know, for presents. Because first of all, as the parent, why do I want to share credit? Just saying. Just an appeal to ego. Why do I want to share credit with giving my kids gifts? So I was reading Matthew 7 last night. Or if he asks for a fish, he will not give him a snake, will he? If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father, who is in heaven, give what is good to those who ask him? So, and the reason why I was coming up with that verse in my head is because last night I wrote about Hannah Kate Williams, who was taken into this woke evangelical family. They were basically providing for her, and, you know, they gave her a limitless credit card, or if there's a limit, that it wasn't a responsible limit, which might as well have been limitless. And she just outspent the thing, and she strapped them with like $168,000 of two of the worst forms of bad debt, credit card and student loan. And anyway, the evil person at least knows how to give good gifts to their children. And that's like the children giving bad gifts to their parental figures. Yeah, I don't know, just made me think of the whole deceit thing. And there's some sort of relevance. And that's why you want to check out evangelicaldarkweb.org. So you didn't miss that story, by the way. So any more you want to comment on with the whole deception thing?
I mean, again, I went into this thinking that the salutary lie was actually permissible. And then, again, you look at all the commentaries throughout history, and even more modern scholars like a John MacArthur, and came away, okay, there is no, you know, saving some innocent life exception to the Ninth Commandment.
Because and their point isn't that you don't do it. Because that's what a lot of these Anabaptists are saying, is that you don't do it. I feel like John MacArthur would say that you don't do it anyway. But I'm not, would Calvin say don't do it anyway? Even though he says that Rahab was,
I know,
virtuous in her process.
I know Denny Burke would say that there is always, I think he holds the view that there's always the alternative option, which is 1 Corinthians, I think 13 or maybe 10. I forget what that verse is. It's the God will always provide a way out verse.
I thought that was in James.
But again, in Calvin's commentaries, you know, given that they're not exactly brief, he does seemingly give, he certainly gives what the alternative would be if for the Hebrew midwives. And obviously we can tell from David's deceptions that they did have negative fruit. And he did not have to do that.
But Rahab had to have done that.
Well, it depends, because obviously, you know, that was a time of miracles. So the idea is, would God have, you know, prevented the Hebrews from being exposed?
Well, he did, but he used Rahab.
But again,
he gave the spies instruction on what to do and when to do it.
But it has to do with whether the deception, the lying itself, is contrary to God's nature, which I, again, that's what the commentaries and the historical analysis would say it was. So, I mean, it is a difficult situation, but I mean, did she have to? Who knows? I mean, obviously, it's a very limited text.
So Matt Walsh gives the example of someone breaks into your house and they mean you harm. Are you going to lie to say that there's no one else in the house? And he says, obviously, I would. But the whole idea that there's always an alternative, which Denny Burke argues, and he's arguing against Denny Burke when he says this, is that if you say, well, I'm not going to tell you, then obviously you just did. If you refuse to answer the question, then obviously you just did answer the question, because no answer actually speaks volumes that you're hiding something. and you know the people that are you're supposed to protect. So I wonder where this comes into conflict with things like hospitality, which I guess would be the Corey Ten Boom argument. Would you know hospitality has something to do with it? Warfare has something to do with it.
I think the Tori Ten Boom, I won't say deception, but her loophole was under the table, because they were technically under the table, but they were in the basement under the table or whatever. So she could
act. I'm not overly familiar.
I learned that today, but I think that might have been David Morrell that had that, or it was someone else. So there is that option.
See, I'm not actually convinced that Matt Walsh really lied to these people.
Yeah, I haven't seen
it. They were just stupid and greedy.
I haven't seen it, and I doubt most of the critics have. And again, their objection is whether it was dishonest to have paid her, not for necessarily the content of the movie itself.
No, that was my thing. Is like, is it a sin to have paid her? And I guess the answer of tonight is not necessarily, because there's no real instance. There's no, I guess, scripture to really back it up. It is a logical extrapolation and a question of Christian ethics. That was my bigger concern, because I'm pretty sure he says his name is Matt. He puts on a comically bad disguise and they just go along with it because he paid them money for the interview. And that money was probably funneled in through an LLC. That was the movie's project, and the check did not say Daily Wire. So where exactly was the lie? Other than the fact that he was not forthright about who he was and what his intentions were. Because at the end of the day, these people, you just need to get them on camera talking, and they're ridiculous. I've read White Fragility. It is a ridiculous book. It is not logical. And I did a review series on it. It's one of the early contents of Evangelical Dark Web, was a chapter-by-chapter review of White Fragility by Robin DiAngelo. And she's the primo interview in that movie. And yeah, I think Formosa and Black Bear is right. You know, they don't care as long as they're making money. Because I can't imagine Robin DiAngelo is making as much money as she was in 2021.
Yeah, I mean, peak wokeness. Maybe not peak wokeness, but peak BLM has peaked.
It has peaked.
You know, white apathy towards BLM has increased back to normal levels. Maybe even it's surpassed normal levels. But that's always how these things work. It's like a cycle of like white people care, and then they grow indifference because they see that black people are like perpetually ungrateful and malcontent. It happened in the 60s where white people were kind of supportive, and then, you know, they saw the early fruits of the civil rights movement. They saw the continuous dissatisfaction.
Rise in crime in major cities.
And
that's when the major cities became unlivable.
And suddenly they became a lot more apathetic, whereas they might have been, you know, at first supportive of civil rights to some extent, and then they became apathetic. It's a cycle. You know, we see this with Michael Brown, the BLM riots and the movement gets started, and then white people become apathetic. And white people are back to being apathetic, as they should be, though not in great enough numbers towards the whole black malcontents.
Yeah, I think the reason for that is because white people try so hard to participate in black culture.
Yeah, I mean,
I think there's two reasons why white people smoke weed. One is they're hippies. They're trying to be hippies. I think as a hippies / surfers, a lot of overlap in that culture, in those cultures. And then two is to participate in black culture. That's the reason I'm most familiar with.
I mean,
I've most seen in person is that these white people are smoking weed because they want to participate in black culture.
Well, I mean, there is that, I won't say.
Yeah, if we're playing Family Feud, number one answer on the board.
Well, there is that like family or little brother syndrome, where it's like a lot of white people, you know, they want to help out the black community. So they want to give them a hand. But at the same time, the more you start giving out handouts and start giving out charity and start helping people out, and then you realize that, you know, they don't want the help. They don't use the help. They are more or less belligerent, and they still hate you. Then you get the message.
I mean, that's like the story of voter outreach, if you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Republicans still haven't gotten the message.
No, they have not. But you know, this time they're going to go woke for Jews, and that'll totally work.
Yeah.
They're just going to run on Kamala Harris being anti-Semitic, and that's somehow going to overshadow the fact that she's married to a Jew and she's Bolshevik in the sheets and in the streets. No, no, she is as not anti-Semitic as they come. I do have enough memes for a meme review. Have we not done a meme review since July?
It has been a while.
Okay, so we got some memes. Let's go for meme review. Then we're going to do last call for questions. So this is meme review. It's brought to you by no one because we don't have real sponsors here. These are some memes that I've compiled, and we're going to go in reverse chronological order of when I bookmarked them. First meme is the absolute worst stereotypes imaginable. It's Apu holding back the dam of water for Indians. So basically, the message of the meme is that Apu is the best Indian stereotype for Indian people, because everything else since that guy made the documentary about Apu, like, the stereotypes have gotten way worse.
Well, and keep in mind, every male character on The Simpsons is a stereotype. And second, they did not show Apu crapping on the streets of Springfield.
They did not show him doing that. He was actually I don't want to say an honorable individual because he did cheat on his wife. That's where the Homer backing up into the bushes meme comes from. But to me, I think that's a 10 out of 10. Like, you nailed it. This is from at the Ebony Mall, which I believe is a Star Wars reference. I just thought this was hilarious. It's from Real Justin Lewis. Sharing racist memes every day. Really? A man of your talents? It's a peaceful life, which is which this meme template comes from Rogue One, probably the most overrated of all the Star Wars movies. Because it's a retcon, that's why it's overrated.
It's a retcon, it has A-list talent, but doesn't use it. I mean,
the most interesting character is like a subplot in the film. The black guy that's a rebel on Jeddah. Like, he's the most interesting character.
Yeah, Harrison Whitaker.
Yeah. But instead, they have a moral dilemma in that film is, should you shoot the Empire scientist? Yes!
And by the way, that would not be a violation of the Sixth Commandment.
Yes, it would not have been. It's not murder. They're not even civilians. They're not combatants, but they're certainly not innocent bystanders. They're making a weapon for the people that you're fighting a war against. No, they're military targets. Why is this even a dilemma?
For the record, going back to the commentaries now, that Calvin actually does say that when Pharaoh was demanding that the Israelites be slain, that was above and beyond any measure of war because it was during a time of peace. So that was a peacetime measure. That was not just you killing all your enemies because
they don't fight again in a war.
Yeah. That was not some act of war. That was an act of peacetime governance. So,
okay, this is from you. Imago Dei, Imago Dei.
Yeah.
The Drake meme. And what's interesting about this is I don't know if you saw that graph of like the usage of Imago Dei has like completely spiked since World War II. I don't know if that inspired the meme here.
No.
But it's kind of an interesting coincidence.
I saw people using it, and I'm just like, Imago Dei, DEI? Whoa. How has no one talked about this before?
I don't think you're super original, but, you know, it is worth mentioning.
We need to like, bring that back and, like, emphasize it.
Okay, and this is from Spider-Man, right? I prefer the real Israel flag, and then it's like a... It's not the, you know, the nation state. And then it's the actual nation state. I said the real Israel flag. And perfection is when you get to the, you know, the Christian flag, which I don't even think is the best Christian flag. But nonetheless, that is the most popular Christian flag.
Because if that's Spider-Man 3, like when he goes Dark Peter and like he's got like the symbiotic Venom plot and he goes like evil Peter, he answers the phone and says, Shalom.
Are you serious?
Apparently, that's a thing.
I haven't seen this.
I saw the clip today. I saw a meme. Someone posted that. And then even Grok confirms it. So
But okay. I did watch the scene today, and he
says he answers. Artificial intelligence would never lie to us.
But he answers the phone and says shalom.
Although, fun fact about artificial intelligence. So I sometimes use AI for writing very sparingly, and it got some basic details wrong that I was able to verify. Like when J.D. Greer was president of the Southern Baptist Convention, AI got that wrong.
It didn't include 2021.
No, it got all the years wrong. Oh, okay. It said that he left in like 2022. It was like, no, he did not. Ed Litton, I guess he was forgotten about, but I realize that Ed Litton copied J.D. Greer, but no, he was a different president of the Southern Baptist Convention. Anyway, this is a meme about Haitians. It's from Patriarchy House, Hannah, I think. I know she follows me or whatever, but it's blurred out. You know, the wrestlers, Pitbulls, and then behind them is hungry Haitians. And I just think that is the ultimate battle that we want to see is Haitians versus Pitbulls, and just see how that plays out. And that's about the stereotype there. This one's about old. This one's called Old Man Yells at Clouds, making fun of James White. Little Brain yelling at Big Brain, who's thinking about the Crusaders, who represents the Crusaders. And they're not saying anything disrespectful in return. I do think this is almost the accurate way to view the situation. Obviously, people on our side have said a lot of things about James White, but I do think Old Man Yells Out Cloud might be an accurate representation of what went on with this controversy.
Yeah, I mean, kind of an ongoing trend, but yes.
Let's see, how many do I got? Repulsive new form of degeneracy, Jews. Is this an intellectual achievement? And I think about when people talk about the Weimar Republic and how like Freudian psychology was some sort of intellectual achievement. I think about this.
Yeah, I mean, I forget who said it, but it was like that Freud was... like a lot of his analysis came from interviewing, patients that were family members who were sexually abused by, you know, and, you know, those family members, his extended family so happened to have been of Jewish, you know, faith.
Yeah, I got a lot of memes.
And therefore he was analyzing, like he was deriving his sexual, psychosexual analysis from the fact that his family members were molested.
Let's see, this one's a liberal meme. This one's like a liberal meme. So I'm not even sure why we have it. It's like fascists have taken control of the trolley. So the idea is like the person controls which group of people the trolley runs over and are trying to commit genocide. They're starting with the gays. You can flip the lever, sending the trolley into a meat grinder, but that would require coming to terms with our new reality. On the other hand, you could just ignore it so you don't have to feel bad. And that's making fun of Reddit.
But that's also
this is from Reddit Lies. It's a liberal meme, and you can tell because it has too many words.
Yeah, this is
and it's meme. Making fun. This is a left can meme update. We got some. This one is from Educated Hillbilly. Gen X is the Olympic shooter from Turkey who does not need he wears glasses, but he doesn't need the special goggles to see the target. And then this Gen Z is like the Chinese person or Asian or whatever that won. I think they won the gold and he won silver, but he won the gold back in like 2012 or something like that.
He won the gold in our hearts.
He did win the gold in our hearts. This one is a meme template of Phineas and Ferb, which to me gets a penalty for it, but nonetheless, wow, we're finally in a state where I can legally kill my child. And then the mom's like, I worry about you sometimes, Candace. And
now, that, I mean, the sad reality is there's a lot of mothers that do that take their daughters to the abortion clinic.
This is Crusader Pepe, and you know Phineas and Ferb might give you a penalty, but SpongeBob gets you a bonus, a premium. Yeah, the Patrick Starr returning to his rock to see all the people hiding under his rock. Who are you people? And it's referring to all the Twitter anons that have the laser eyes.
Yeah, you had this on the back burner for a while.
Yes, this the last one is dated July 12th. So this is John Harris, is courtesy of this meme. Sir, they're rejecting the proposition. Nation, what do we do? And this is from that, I don't know what World War II movie it is.
Isn't this the one that always has like voice dubbed over it?
Yes, yes, it is the same movie, because this is like the Hitler breakdown scene. And then it's like, make Lincoln gay. I just thought that was hilarious. That's from John Harris. And if you're not subscribed to John Harris, what are you doing? So that is our meme review for tonight. And I'll give the last call for questions. And do you want to say, if you like this kind of content, do subscribe to the channel, to the podcast, if you are new. Evangelical Dark Web is a Christian news gathering and commentary ministry. And I do want to emphasize that, because we're not just a commentary ministry. We try to, you know, talk about stories, break stories even. A lot of people do commentary, and nothing wrong with that. But I did want to fill out a niche, because there are not a lot of good ones out there. Protestia is pretty good. Dissenter is pretty good. But there's very few of us in this collective faith news gathering market that are not sold out, not, you know, that practice any amount of discernment and stuff like that. You know, we're talking Russell Moore's Christianity Today, Christian Post, which is sometimes based, but a lot of times very cringe. And apparently they don't pay people to get their articles featured on their website. So I saw Keith Foskey's article was published on their website. I don't think he's getting any money for that, because I've heard from other people who've had their articles featured on the website that they didn't get paid for that.
So they don't get syndicated.
Well, they're getting syndicated, but they're not getting paid for the syndication of their content. Makes you think. I mean, I wouldn't pay Janet Mefford for an article. But anyway, you can support Evangelical Dark Web. Least you can do is like this video, subscribe to the channel, because new subscriptions are the best things for YouTube algorithm. It's not the likes, it's not the comments, it's the new subscribes. Where did you get the name Evangelical Dark Web? So that came from the Brian Auten article that he wrote at Mere Orthodoxy, and I've kind of co-opted it because I was looking for a name for what to call this, and I said that's a good name, and I chose it and ran with it. But I co-opted Brian Auten, who's the Fed, and that's where that comes from. So people wonder that, because they're like, oh, you use the word dark, and I guess they view that as archetypally evil, which I don't think they're wholly wrong, but I think they're being wholly ignorant, or they're feigning a level of ignorance, because you can obviously tell that's not what this is in reference to. Playoff intellectual dark web. Yeah. But the intellectual dark web was kind of always cringe, because no one in the intellectual dark web was really right wing at all. They were all just liberals that challenged liberal mainstream. No, they didn't switch teams at the time.
Pretended to switch teams.
No, not even at the time when that was coined. So we're talking like 2019. Joe Rogan was flaming libtard in 2019. No,
so it kind of is.
Jordan Peterson was never right wing. So I thought you got it from Cody Leibold. No, I did not get it from Cody Leibold. Fun fact, though, he did try to sell me the domain to the .com. Once. I did not take him up on that offer. I didn't have the Evangelical Dark Web didn't have the budget for paying whatever he was going to charge for a domain name. And like the .org is fine. So to my knowledge, he probably still owns the domain for .com, which he's not using, so it's just costing him money. So anyway, those are a good question. Good question. I get asked that all the time. Where do you get the name from? But otherwise, I think we're going to wrap up for tonight. My name is Reyes, the Evangelical Dark Web. Do subscribe to the newsletter as well. We got a lot of content coming out. And not all of it gets put on YouTube for videos and stuff like that, or podcasts, articles, a lot of articles, stuff like that. I got a major one on Robert Morris coming out. And then I'm halfway done a major research on J.D. Greer. And it's like, I haven't even finished the wokeness. I haven't touched his views on homosexuality. But I wanted to kind of write like, hey, this is why this guy's a false teacher. put it all in one place. So stuff to look forward to. But until then, stay based. Christ is King. And we will catch you on the next one.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.